Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 143, recorded on November 17th, 2011. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm very good. Can you tell that I'm recovering from a cold? Does it come through?
Me too. Oh, it sucks.
Well, you sound great.
It's been going around.
You sound very normal and good.
I can turn the phlegm on if you want.
No, keep that dialed down.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got the phlegm filter on the.
Okay. Well, let's not talk too much about
processor here.
Let's not talk about that because people don't want to hear about that.
Are you like that? My wife's like that. She can't handle anything.
I'm fine with it. I just know people don't want to hear about it. Jeff Gamut's also here from the Mac Observer.
I don't have a cold.
Awesome.
And both you guys, you sound awesome.
Chocolatey.
Yeah, lickably good.
Good.
The velvety dulcet tones.
Yes.
Michael Johnston.
All right, so iOS 5 has been released. iOS 5.
Yeah,
like a couple months, weeks and weeks. I missed some decimal
Michael,
points. 501.
You're so pretty.
See, if I didn't have you guys sitting around ready to make fun of me every single time I... You know, miss some decimal points.
At least you're getting it from us and not from the audience, you know, a week later.
Well, yeah, 20 minutes from now, as they're like, what are you talking about? I know what I'm talking about.
The one guy that didn't realize it was out, and he'll be like, oh my God, iOS 5's out.
Yeah, iOS 5.0.1 has been released. It was released on Thursday, which it addresses some of the battery life issues.
Kind of, sort of.
Okay, so
depending.
What's
meh?
Meh? Is that what you say, meh?
I say meh.
Any changes at all? Have you noticed any improvement?
You know, it's funny. I think I have because I've had my iPhone unplugged now for maybe 2 days. The weird thing is I'm still getting this weird thing, but I had this on my iPhone 4 too, where there's this weird sort of trajectory of the battery life, and it like... goes down from 100% down into the 50-40% range like super fast, and then it just starts slowing down, and then it's like got this long tail on it where it lasts for a long time.
Well, that sounds like it's determining what the remaining life is incorrectly.
Exactly. So I'm not convinced that there is a battery issue, but if I were just a casual user, like when I'm seeing it, I'm like, oh man, the battery's draining like crazy.
Sure.
But what I did this last time was I kind of waited on it and I didn't rush. You know, usually when it gets under 40%, I start worrying about, you know, plugging it in somewhere. Like I get freaked out, I'm going to run out of battery. So I kind of avoided plugging it in and it lasted like a whole nother day before I had to really plug it in before it got down into the red range. So I don't know. It might be perception that I still have a battery issue more than an actual issue. And I think that's good advice. I think what I need to do is turn off the percentage indicator. And I'd probably be
turn that off. I don't have that on. That's just there to make you crazy.
Exactly. That's what I think I need to like not have that on, because that way when it's at half, you know, it's not going to say 30% and
sure,
it's, you know, at half.
All right. So maybe I need to not obsess about charging up my iPhone and see how it runs. Because
exactly,
I'm like you. When I'm getting below 50%, I start freaking out that I'm not going to have my phone running all day.
Now, keep in mind, I do have a Mophie juice pack always handy and ready. So I'm willing to, you know, risk it because I know if in a pinch I can plug it in and I'll have juice. I don't go crazy is what I'm saying. Don't like run around, you know, without a battery thing running below 50%. That would be insane.
that is crazy talk.
I know. Yeah, I think I'm obsessed about batteries. So, I don't know. Maybe I never had a problem and just perceived I had a problem.
Well, you know what, Adam? Good news, because Apple is not stopping.
I know.
They're continuing to investigate the iOS 5 battery issues. The recent iOS software update addressed many of the battery issues that some customers experienced on their iOS 5 devices, the company said in a statement. We continue to investigate a few remaining issues. So now, Apple, of course, has not been in the habit over the years of disclosing even this minute amount of information regarding their plans like this. So
it makes
nice
sense that they would, though.
Sure, yeah, and it's definitely good because it implies, hey, you know, we worked on it, we got some stuff out the door, stuff that we could fix pretty quickly, here's that, and we're going to continue working on it, so if you're still having issues, don't worry, we're still on it.
Right, and now they don't have to deal with the headaches that they went through with the whole iPhone 4 antenna.
Sure, and I don't think it's going to be that bad, because honestly, the iOS 5 battery life issues have not been as nearly as a big a deal as the antenna issue. And it's not, is it affecting everybody, would you say, that everybody has really been slammed by horrible battery life in iOS 5?
I'm going to guess that people that use their iPhones a lot more are noticing a bigger problem than casual iPhone owners.
Right. Yeah, so they're still working on it. According to a German Mac site, Mackerkopf, which I have not heard of before, but Mac Rumors decided
to
source them.
Aren't German words just awesome?
They're fun. There's a PF in there.
Is that Kampf? Mackerkopf?
Kopf?
Kopf?
Not sure.
My horrible German.
Yeah.
I
know
love
no German.
How in German you can take pretty much any two or three words and smash them together, and it totally works.
Yeah.
It's a new German word.
So
it's like Legos for your mouth.
I like that.
All right.
But like I said, I have not heard from these guys. Mac Rumors seems to put some faith in them, especially considering the fact that their information is in line with what we've been hearing. So 5.02 is coming very soon. They claim by the end of next week, before the end of next week. 5.02.
That would be fast.
Mm-hmm. In addition, they're predicting iOS 5.1 will bring some, they call Siri extensions, as well as some hardware control from Siri, such as taking a photo, making a video, toggling Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, that sort of stuff, which would be very cool. You know, one of the things that I like about jailbreaking is SB settings, and that allows me to, I swipe the status bar and a little menu comes down and it's full of these toggles. It's very Android-like. You just pull this menu down and you can toggle your Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, a bunch of other things that you throw up there, whatever you want. So this would be a great thing for Siri to do for you.
Did you see the Safari shortcut hack for those toggles that's been circling around lately?
I haven't.
Oh, yeah. It's a JavaScript thing, isn't it?
When there's actually like a domain. I'm going to have to find the information as we're talking. I should have had it ready because it's kind of a cool trick. Somebody sent it to me. Maybe I can find it in my email. But yeah, there's basically a URL structure that you can load into mobile Safari, and then it'll launch to that settings panel in the settings in iOS.
That makes sense. There's been a URL structure for a while.
Yeah, and so now there's some apps on the App Store where you can set an icon, attach that URL to it, and then, you know, save it to your home screen as like a Safari, you know, Safari shortcut. And then so what people are doing are putting all those into like a toggle settings folder.
Yeah. So this is on, I'm seeing it on Apple Insider.
Yeah.
Safari-based iOS shortcuts offer quick access to Wi-Fi toggles, airplane mode, etc. So this
it's not as slick as the jailbreak thing, but
because it doesn't actually toggle the setting for you. It just brings you to that preference pane.
Exactly, right, to the exact preference pane, and then you got to flip the switch.
So I'm not convinced that that's any better.
It's just, you know, it's quick especially, access to deep level settings.
Well, airplane mode isn't deep
10,
level.
10 clicks, huh?
Airplane mode isn't deep level at all.
Well, then that one's not as useful. But I mean, there's like a way to kind of drill down.
I suppose.
With a single click.
It's cool. We'll throw
a link in the show notes, Michael.
We'll put a link in the show notes.
You just want to think you're cooler because you jailbreak.
I mean, I am. It's the truth.
But you're not.
No, actually, we're cooler, Michael.
Because you've got fancy notifications. I have to admit, I do want those fancy notifications. And I have toyed with the idea of... My problem is, okay, so I would have to do it tethered, right? I'd have to have a tethered jailbreak. And...
Yuck.
Well, I'm usually near my computer. I don't like the idea of traveling... on a tethered iPhone, especially with the fact that I use GPS on my phone. But you know, the idea of trying it out and seeing how stable it was and seeing if it was workable, because I've used my iPad on a tethered jailbreak for a while, and I think I went a month without having to restart it, and I think the only reason I actually restarted was because I just wanted to. But the issue I see, the biggest issue is, if it's terrible right now, I won't be able to roll back.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because,
yep.
You know, I can keep the backups from before I update. I can have backups from after I update, but I can't keep those new, I can't use those new backups on iOS 4. They won't work. The phone won't let you do it. I'm guessing a lot of the structure is incompatible. The biggest issue for me would be the SMSs, and I'm not entirely sure that the I suppose I could do a test where I see if the structure has changed. I don't know if anybody knows if the SMS database has changed structure that I couldn't use it on iOS 4. Let me know, because otherwise I can just move everything back, because that's the only thing that really I can't manually get back. Anyway,
send Michael some email. But
yeah, send me some email. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com.
These new commands, because like one of the stories made it sound like, oh, there's going to be these great new Siri commands. And then the examples were take a picture, make a video, which to me just sounds like a command that an unscrupulous boyfriend would want to use to make some, you know,
make a blackmail.
Personal porn.
Yeah.
And.
Oh, I shouldn't laugh.
Hey, you know what we should do? We should make a video. Oh, that's a terrible idea. Okay, we won't do that.
And no. See, in that, because it's going to be a little more, like Siri might not understand it the first time you say, we should make a video. And then he looks off to the left real quick and realizes it didn't take any, and she's like, yeah, I really think we should make a video.
And when she says, why do you keep repeating that? What do you mean? When I keep
what do you
saying,
mean?
Make a video? Nothing, honey.
I'm just saying we should make a video. That's all. Make a video.
When he finally hears the bing, bing.
And yeah.
And he's like, okay, honey, let's get it on.
Yeah. And then while we're getting it on, we should also switch off Wi-Fi.
This thing again. Get out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the one that I think would be simple and has seemed like it would be helpful to me a couple times when I've been in the car, specifically for Pandora, would be the ability to launch a specific app. Not necessarily even control it. I mean, ultimately, it'd be great to be able to control it. But
sure.
Just to be able to launch an application by voice in some scenarios for me has come up now. It's like, oh, I wish I could just, you know, launch that without having to drill down and find the folder and figure out where it is.
Yeah, it's a situation.
When you're driving, that's really not safe.
Definitely. I agree. Driving, see, that's the number one use case for Siri for me, because I do a lot of driving and I use my iPhone while I'm driving. And by that,
no,
I mean...
No, we don't do that.
No, I mean,
don't
I use...
Don't do that.
What I do is I
don't... What you mean is you're the passenger, right?
I mean, I pull over.
All right.
And I use my phone. So whenever I get a text message, I pull off the highway and stop completely before I use my phone.
So that means everyone that has Michael's phone number, just start texting him all day long.
I'll never get anywhere.
He's out driving.
Yeah. Not going anywhere.
No, but I mean, Siri has been awesome for that. I never texted in the car, but now with Siri, I can, and it's kind of cool. I've used it quite frequently, and it keeps me safe and hands-free, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it'd be great if I could.
Killer feature for me.
You know, so the thing that's exciting, and who knows, because who's ever heard of this website, but the idea of extensions for Siri, the ability for developers to write extensions so you say, Siri, do something with TomTom, or you know, throw a new action into OmniFocus.
I think there's no doubt that Apple wanted that from the very beginning.
Oh, sure.
You know, that there's going to be some sort of API integration made available to developers, and then it's going to get really just crazy awesome.
Totally.
I mean, it's awesome now, but
it's going to get crazy awesome.
It's all about the integration with the apps.
Mm-hmm. So. Let's see, moving on. Oh, so Apple has released updates for Airport Extreme and Airport Express and the time capsules. So for those of you who have that, interesting thing, you know, of course, we don't really bring that kind of stuff up on this show because it's not necessarily relevant. However,
it is now.
Well, is for the reason that, okay, so listener George wrote in. Letting us know that he was having trouble connecting to his Wi-Fi network on his iPhone. And I believe it was after he had updated to the latest iOS 5.01. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't get on Wi-Fi. He was really unsure what was going on. He was restarting things, going crazy, banging his head. And then he realized there was an update available. So he updated and boom, he could get back on. So Adam, I'm guessing you know more specifics on that.
No. I was just saying because now, you know, with an iOS device, you have the ability to manage all your airports. So, I mean, it has become more relevant.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah,
setting
you got
up
the airport
utility. Network, you now have the airport utility. Yeah. So.
But I guess there have been, was it the case universally that one could not get onto an airport base station without updating the base station if you were on 501?
No.
Okay. I don't think so.
There were some people that were having airport problems, and I have talked to people with iPads running iOS 5 that were having airport problems on Wi-Fi problems on networks other than airport as well.
Okay.
So I think it's a problem that's been hitting some people and is not limited to airport base stations.
Okay,
but it does bring up a good point about, you know, Apple's trying to market airport base stations to iOS owners who might not have computers, right? That was I'm assuming one of the reasons for adding the airport utility.
Yeah.
So someone can walk in, get an iPad, get an airport, you know, a Wi-Fi iPad, an airport, and they're all done. They're set, right?
Except that it doesn't come with the airport utility, and you have to be on the internet in order to get it. And if you don't have an iPhone or an iPad with 3G, then what do you do?
Well, yeah. if the Apple salesperson is smart, they'll and they see you buying a base station and an iPad or iPhone at the same time, they'll say, hey, before you leave, you should really download this application. It's free.
Yeah. Right, but if you buy it at Best Buy,
the other thing that I don't think you can do from the utility is do an upgrade.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, the upgrade works really slick.
Yeah, you can. You can do it right from your iPad or whatever. You're laying in bed, you don't have to get up, just do it.
Yeah, I was actually sitting on my couch and realized, oh, I forgot to do that while I was in my office.
Mm-hmm.
My iPad's on my lap, and so I just brought up the utility and did it from there.
You can upgrade
your airport base station from the Wi-Fi utility airport utility?
Yep. Yes, you can.
Oh, cool. Does it just like pop up when you launch the app and say, hey, there's an update?
Well, when you tap on the on your base station icon in the view and mm-hmm. you get that little menu, one of the options shows that you
it's under version. Okay, I found it.
Yeah, so you go to version. So not only can you install and update right there, you can downgrade. You can go to different older versions if you want. And all this stuff is supported right in the app, and it's really
well
slick.
So there you go.
Yep.
So it is relevant because, I mean, if you haven't applied the update and you're sitting there right now and you've got your iPhone and your airport utility, go upgrade your airport base station.
Totally. So,
kinda rocks.
Yeah, we talked last week about the panorama, the secret panorama mode in the camera app on iOS 5 that you can enable with a property list hack.
Did you do it?
I'm not on iOS 5.
Oh, that's right.
I guess I could have done it on my iPad. I haven't messed with it. Did you do it?
No.
Jeff?
No.
Okay.
So I already have a perfectly usable panorama app, and
you don't want to suck one?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it didn't. For those who didn't hear last week, it's not that great, which is why they probably didn't enable it.
Wait, so now I want to know, which panorama app do you prefer, Jeff?
Hold on, I'll tell you.
I use Pano.
Just the one simply called Pano. We might have mentioned this before.
Actually, I have two that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. See This and 360.
Hmm. Does that do a 360? Can you actually do like a 360 with that?
Yes, yeah. 360 rocks.
Ooh.
And you can share it out on Twitter and Facebook, and they have like a web version of it that I think is not Flash, that works on iOS devices.
That is correct. It is not Flash.
So view your 3D panos, 360 panos.
So it's up, down, all around?
Yep.
Yes.
And then when you save them on your iOS device, it also captures the gyroscope information.
Oh.
So you can view it either by panning around manually, or you can just move your iPhone in the same virtual space, and it will re-render those movements so that you can move around your panorama by moving your phone around.
Yeah, like the like that space shuttle cockpit.
Yep. Yes.
Awesome. You know, you have to have a special tripod head. That's what they use to take that photo. Obviously, you're not going to get as high a quality.
It does a pretty good job.
I'm guessing it's pretty close. Does it do an overlay? You match it up with the...
Yeah, there's a grid. It gives you the grid, so you can kind of... You have grid lines to follow along, so you can kind of keep
it
straight.
And then it highlights the parts of the grid where it has enough data.
And it starts filling in as you go. There's a little weird overlappiness that I usually get in my stuff, but it's good enough for sharing on the web. You know, that's what I was wondering, is what people use. Because, Jeff, you mentioned now You See This, which is, I think, the... Is that what it's called? Now You See This?
I think it's called Now You See This.
From Boinks?
Yes, that's the one.
And that does that sort of layered individual image style where it's not really truly a panorama. I haven't found is one that's just really good, and maybe Pano that you mentioned, Michael, is it for doing really nice, good, high quality kind of panos.
Yeah, super wide panorama.
Yeah.
Yep.
See, I'm old school because I'll take a bunch of photos and then stitch them together in Photoshop.
Right.
Yeah. That sounds painful, though.
It's actually, there's a whole script in Photoshop. So if you use one of the scripts that lets you bring in a bunch of images into a single file as layers and then run the panorama script, it does all the hard work for you. It's actually pretty easy.
Huh.
And welcome to this week's episode of We Have Photoshop.
just so I'm getting the right one, Michael, which one the one you use is simply called Panorama?
Pano.
Pano.
Pano, I believe.
Oh, okay.
And that's what it's called on my phone. I'm pretty sure it's called Pano in the iTunes store. I mean, we've talked about it. It's almost like the original Panorama app that everybody was talking about. Yeah, Pano. Totally.
Michael, you say this as if we actually listen to what any of us are saying to each other.
As if you actually remember things that you say. I'm sure both of you recommended this to me.
And the Boinks thing is called You Gotta See This. I've talked to those guys about this, that I can never remember the name of their app, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
That is a big problem.
You Gotta See This is the name.
And unfortunately, the name of the app doesn't tell you what it does.
Yeah, yeah. And it's too nondescript. Anyway, so what I was actually getting to, there's another hidden iOS 5 feature, which is really cool, an autocorrect keyboard bar. So as you're typing, and I think this is going to be...
Well, that's all Android-like.
Yeah, it's like, you mean totally. We borrowed this from Android?
And like Windows Pocket PC.
Yeah. Which it's actually a really good feature.
Yeah. I mean, you're typing, heal, H-E apostrophe L-L, he will. And you type H-E-L-L, and that's not what you want.
Right. Oh, that's a bad example, because if you type H-E-L-L, you'll always get heal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll never spell
hell.
Okay, no. Here, I'll get... here's a better one. Wheel. We will. The contraction of we will. W-E-L-L. So well usually autocorrects to well. And then... usually what I do is I add the extra L and then it goes, oh, okay, I see you're doing something else, and it adds the, it makes it we will. But yeah, this gives you a bunch of different, it gives you an assortment of suggestions based on what it thinks you're trying to do, which is nice. Unfortunately,
right above the keyboard bar.
Mm-hmm. Still, according to people who have tried it, and if you want to try it, again, the instructions are going to be in the show notes. You use the iBackup bot method. You take one of the backups that you have on your computer, you tweak the file there, and you send the backup to your phone, and then it's enabled. Unfortunately,
same way you enable that Pano feature, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's a little bit unstable still, which again makes sense why they didn't enable it.
Why we don't have it.
Yeah. Give it a try, though. It looks cool.
That is a cool feature to take over or to borrow from Android.
There are, I mean, talk about Notification Center. Yeah. that's a feature they borrowed.
Quasi related to this, I need to ask you guys a tech support question because one of my listeners brought this up, one of my dedicated listeners, and I want to help them out, but I don't have a good answer for it. And I hadn't even realized this had happened. Do you guys have Pages on iOS at all?
I have.
I use it on my iPad some.
Okay. So Pages used to, when you would be editing a document, the little ruler bar comes down that had all your kind of controls on it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It used to have tabbing controls up there so that if you needed to tab something, if you were working on a document and you wanted to put a tab in, you just reached up and you tapped the tab button in the ruler. With the latest update, I guess they removed that, and I hadn't noticed it.
Huh.
Now, to get a tab, you have to tap to bring up the select all, paste little pop-up, and then you have to click the little white arrow, and then you have to click insert, and then you have to click tab. So it's like four clicks to put a tab.
That's hideous.
So if anybody knows a hack way to like get that tab back in the ruler, or like why Apple doesn't have a way to customize that toolbar like they would in a toolbar in OS X is beyond me.
And why would they take away a feature like that, which is actually really important?
Jeff, what company are we talking about?
Exactly.
We've said this so many times. Why would they take away a feature? Blah, 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 blah. It's Apple.
Well, and what's even more irritating to me is right to the left of the letter A on the standard keyboard, there's this nice little gap. That seems like you could put a half tab key.
Yeah.
How about that?
How about it?
Oh, you're right. There's that nice little gap there. And
that's true. And it's not a...
Oh,
I wouldn't call that
right.
A nice
okay, so the
gap.
Tab thing is totally gone. But now there's a little X.
Well, that thing. Just closes the toolbar.
That wasn't there.
There.
Oh, it has been there?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. I thought
I don't
it
think
was
that's
there.
Been there.
Oh, did it always just auto went away when you tapped in to edit your document? I guess. I don't know. Anyway, they effed it up. I mean, that's just dumb. So,
yeah, sure.
And there's plenty of room for those extra things there. There was no reason to remove them. So I don't know why they did that. And if anybody knows a way to get them back or some other trick that maybe I'm not aware of yet, let us know. Send me an email, mattcast@gmail.com, or what's the
feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't send it to the Mattcast. They don't.
Oh,
know
you know
about.
What? I fixed it for you. Swipe down on the ruler.
Uh huh.
And when you swipe down just on the ruler part. And you have to make sure you're just in the ruler. If you start swiping from the little tool buttons above the ruler, it doesn't work. But if you swipe just on the ruler, it drops a tab wherever you need it.
Well, that puts a tab stop, but not that doesn't tab in your document.
Oh. Well, and here I thought I was being helpful.
No, that's great, though. I didn't even know about that feature. That's cool. So if you need to add additional... Oh, that's... Yeah, additional tab stops, you just tap into the ruler and it puts a tab stop up there. How do I change it to if I want a right tab stop instead of a left, I wonder. I don't know.
Huh.
This week in how to use...
You know, the show isn't called This Week, so I don't know why. It's not This Week in anything.
I'm just joking.
Oh, okay.
It was a horrible joke.
I'm sorry.
No, I thought it was great.
It was good.
Well done, Adam.
Thank you.
This Week in Pages.
Yes.
TWIP.
All right. So iTunes Match is available now. Ta-da! On Monday.
And it sucks.
Oh, it yeah. Okay, come on now. It doesn't suck.
Okay. Tell me how I can use my smart albums with it. Yeah, it sucks.
You can access your smart album, your smart, you mean your smart playlists?
My smart playlists. Tell me how to use smart playlists with iTunes Match.
Are they not available? I thought they were available.
Nope.
New
music. No, dude, you're crazy. I see them right here. I made a new smart playlist today and it's available already on my iPad. Right there. New music. It's right there. You Look Nice Today. Smart playlist of all You Look Nice Today. That's right there.
So is that something that they just flipped on? Because
dude, it's been
smart
working.
Playlists haven't been there.
It's working. So no. Okay. So here's what you got to make sure. You look in the sidebar.
Oh yeah. There's a thing about playlists.
They can't reference other playlists. I think that's the hang-up.
They also can't have anything that's non-music in them. Whatsoever. So if you have like liner notes or any of that stuff, it will invalidate the entire playlist.
Liner notes? What do you mean?
You know how you can get like some of those albums that have the PDF that comes with it that's like the little CD booklet?
Yeah, and you can also, you can build your own liner notes too if you want, right?
I don't know how that works, but yeah, probably.
I know a guy that has given me custom-made albums that have liner notes that he put together.
There's a trick. That's you can build the what's called the iTunes Extra, you know, like the you know, they sell those whole albums that had
right.
The whole separate interface. You can do all of that by hand.
Oh, that's
with
probably
HTML
what he
code.
Was doing.
Yeah. It kind of rocks. But the point is that you can't have, if your playlist has videos in it, if your playlist has PDFs or anything that is not just a pure music file, they invalidate the whole playlist and it won't sync to iCloud
I think
or
you're
iTunes
wrong.
Match.
I think you're wrong.
I don't think so. Because what you get is a little cloud next to your playlist with a slash through it.
That says something in here isn't right. You can't
right.
Do it.
Exactly.
So I'm looking. Okay, hang on. Set lists. Okay. I don't know.
So, for example, I have a playlist for a podcast and it has a bunch of episodes in it that for some reason iCloud is saying is not eligible for iCloud and that does not show up. Oh, I guess the playlist does show up. Only the tracks for that did not show up. So maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. I think that the playlist, if a playlist has something in there that doesn't work, sure. You can't.
That won't show up in the playlist on your iOS device.
The thing that doesn't work in iCloud, but the playlist, as long as it has other stuff in there. So, like, if you have a playlist that has a bunch of songs and maybe one music video, I think all the songs show up. So, okay, let's jump into this real quick. The iTunes Match. If you're not familiar with exactly how it works, so it's $25 a year. And what it allows you to do is several things. So it scans your iTunes library and determines what songs in the style of Lala, that we've talked about that Apple acquired. It scans everything you have in your library and matches it to what iTunes has available in the store. So if they say, okay, this is a song we recognize, it's here, you have it. Boom. So it, the first part of the process is it scans your entire library, analyzes what it scans, and then when it figures out what matches, then that's available right then.
Can I say something about that real quick?
Go for it.
That I kind of don't like.
Keeps your metadata?
So, no, that works through Genius. So once you turn Match on, you cannot turn Genius off.
Well, you can hide it from your sidebar. You can hide Genius. That's what
I do. Right, but it's still on.
But that's not the same as shutting it
and
off.
And updating.
Well, what's wrong with having Genius on if it's the same as iTunes Match?
Yeah, exactly. It's just something people should be aware of.
Sure.
Some people don't like, well, it's weird because it won't work without it, right? for iTunes Match to work, you need to send your data to Apple and tell them about all the music that's in your library, which is what Genius does.
Sure.
But there's tons of people out there that don't like
the idea of that. Apple knowing what their music is. So
I'm just telling people, if you're going to buy iTunes Match, they're not mutually exclusive.
Right.
That's all.
So, yeah, totally. Now, for stuff that is not available in iTunes or that for some reason just can't match it, it's confused about it. And honestly, I haven't really... I think there were just a couple instances, maybe on some Beatles songs, where it's not that it said, hey, this is a song we don't recognize. It was more of a, this just didn't work. And I rescanned, and I think I grabbed the ones that weren't working.
Yeah, day one it had some big problems.
I'm not seeing
for it. Me, and there was a bunch of stuff that came up in error. But just the next day, I just went and resent it. So if you go under the store menu, you can say update iTunes Match, and it'll do it again.
So you get the you have the little cloud column.
Yep.
So if you sort by the cloud, you can actually see which ones have been matched, which ones have a little exclamation mark by the cloud. And so what I actually just did, you can right-click any track and you say add to iCloud, it will scan it right there ad hoc for you. And that's what I just
each
did.
Individual track. If you want to do them all at once, though, you can do the other thing.
You can select
the other
them.
Thing is, did you turn on the iCloud status column?
Yes, that's a really great call. Okay, so Command J or right click on the column listing, and turn on iCloud status. And it tells you, what's the two little clouds with the line through it? Oh, that's a duplicate.
It was great for cleaning up my duplicates, by the way.
Yeah,
which has always been a problem.
That's actually
in
a
iTunes
cool feature.
Libraries. Yeah.
Duplicate as in it sees, okay, you serious, this is a real for real duplicate. It's not like something else.
Oh, where it's like
that's what
one
I'm saying.
From one album and one from another album.
Right, and it really understands the difference.
It seemed to. Yeah.
That's good. I like it. So
I think hopefully I deleted all my duplicates. But see, that's the other great thing though, is that I deleted all those duplicates, but guess what? They were all pushed up into iCloud anyway, so if I need to get them back, I would assume I could get them back.
As long as you don't delete them from iCloud. And that's another option that I think wasn't available during the beta period. You can actually... So I go into my new music and I'm like, this... for example, when I work in the Geek Gab, I throw that track into iTunes for the last leg of processing.
Right.
To add metadata and stuff like that. Same with this podcast. I don't need that sync to iCloud, but sometimes it'll get a hold of it. It'll get real antsy, and it'll just do it right away. And that way, you can actually right click. You say, "Delete from iCloud." Are you sure you want to delete this from iCloud? Now, I haven't really figured out how it says this will delete this song from all of your iTunes Match computers and devices, as well as any device which synchronizes with your iTunes library. And that sounds to me like it's going to. Like, you're screwed now. Even if you want to keep it in another computer, it's gone.
That, I don't... From what I read from some of the testing some of the sites had done, that was not what or how it behaved or was what I was told. It will immediately remove it from any iOS devices. That is true, but right. I was told the local copies that would be on any of the computers that you have it linked to would still have, if they had copies of it. I guess that's the thing, is right, because people think, oh, I've turned on iCloud, every Mac that I have logged into it is going to show that track in the iTunes library. It's just, will it show that the little download icon? So if it's not in that library, but it's in the iCloud, it has that little download icon.
But it's still
and you
there.
Can play it
right
on that machine streaming,
I think,
but it's not actually on that machine. But if you actually have downloaded it to that machine by clicking the download button, it's my understanding, even if you expunge it from iCloud, it's not going to reach in and delete
yeah.
that copy. So if I have a copy on Mac A and a copy of, on Mac B, and I delete it from Mac A and delete it from iCloud on Mac A, the copy on Mac B stays there.
Yeah.
That's my understanding.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I think they need to tweak the wording on that, because that does make sense when you think about it. What they're really trying to express is those songs, if you don't have them downloaded, they're not going to be there.
And you delete them out of iCloud and you delete them off your Mac, they are gone.
Right. And then, but however, so you delete a bunch of stuff, you go refresh iCloud on your other computer, you say, oh, you know, I actually do want that in iCloud. Never mind. You could just say add to iCloud and boom, there it is. No biggie.
Mm-hmm. All right. So everything we're hearing or we're talking about, I'm thinking, okay, for those of us that really get how to use our computers and our iPads and our iPhones, there's some stuff we have to think through. But if we work through it, we can figure out how all this stuff works.
That's it. I called it clunky. That's my problem with it. It's not that the service isn't good. And for the price, for $25, I think it's a great value. I mean, there's a lot of value. And we haven't even talked about upgrading tracks yet. But any one of these processes, going through any one of these processes, each one for me has been clunky.
A little scary.
Oh, I have to turn on the iCloud status column. Why wasn't that on by default? I mean, it's a very valuable column for knowing what's going on. They just give you these little icons by default.
So this is not a service that my mom could use.
For mere mortals, no.
Yeah, which means it's not for the average user, which means that Apple should have thought through how they were implementing this.
I agree. I think it should have been in beta a little longer.
Yeah. It's just not that easy to use. Like and you know, it's not even obvious. Like I knew that I could upgrade my tracks and I had to spend 20 minutes figuring out exactly how do I do that.
Yeah. All right.
I mean there's no magic button. It doesn't say, "Hey, this track is eligible for upgrade."
And that's really what Steve Jobs kind of said when he presented iCloud, right? Is if you want to upgrade, boom, there's a button. It really seemed like that, right?
Okay, so this is one of those things where if Steve Jobs were around and running the show, he would have the same talk with the developers that he had with the MobileMe developers.
Yeah.
When he gave them the loaded question. So what is this service supposed to be? And they describe it. And can we have an explicit tag this week?
Yeah, go for it.
And he says, then why the fuck doesn't it do that?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So in the
tell people how to upgrade. Yeah.
Spoiler alert. It's an early part of the biography. But my favorite thing so far that Steve Jobs says to people at Atari, calling them dumb shits.
Yeah. Well, of course they.
Which is something he continued doing throughout his life.
That's true.
Which I really
although he did start bathing, so there's that.
That is good. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, ending spoilers there. So and hopefully explicit.
So tell people how to upgrade their tracks because it took me 20 minutes to figure this out.
Okay, so let me finish the recap of how it works. So it matches all the stuff, all right, and then the long arduous part happens. So if you have a lot of tracks that were not matched, any tracks that weren't matched, it will then, and we're talking music only, it will then upload what it couldn't match to your personal iCloud database. And that part is free. It's included with the service, $25 a year. And then those things will also become available as they're uploaded.
Yeah, and up to 25,000.
Uploads?
Tracks.
Oh, in total.
Well, stuff that's not
purchased.
Yeah. Right. Purchase stuff you purchased on iTunes don't count. But anything that's matched or needs to be uploaded, you know, have a 25,000 limit, which a bunch of people have, you know, emailed me about and got caught by, you know, and really the only resolution is to start chopping up your library, which kind of sucks.
Yeah. Well, people with that much music, what's the deal? What's going on here? Why do you have that much music?
There's a lot of people out there that really love music and have very large collections that they've diligently, you know, ripped over the years into iTunes.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You know?
So I know. I'm not ripping on them. I'm just
you know?
Yeah.
1,000, 5,000, 10,000 CD collections?
I think I have a lot of music and I only have 8,800 tracks. So, but
you got me beat by a long shot.
So iCloud status column is really great for figuring out what's been uploaded, what's been matched, all that stuff. Okay. So the other really interesting part that I didn't get initially is it uses your metadata, which is kind of good, kind of bad. So for example, I had a track, it was really low quality and it didn't really have a lot of metadata. I was hoping that add it to iTunes Match, delete it, re-download it, and I would have complete metadata and I would have album art, right? And I thought that was another thing that Steve talked about. So you'd get the album art stuff too, but
well, you can force
not.
The album art.
You can right click and download it. But the cool thing about it is it keeps your plays and stuff like that. So any like ratings and play count, all that stuff. So it finally syncs your play counts.
And on the metadata thing, this is actually another thing that's really important, because again, for those folks who are really all about the music and they've gone diligently through and they've put all this loving extra metadata on their stuff, they would be really pissed if they went to upgrade and then that all got blown away.
Totally. Yeah.
That would be really bad.
Okay.
So I think they made the right call there.
They really thought that through.
Cleaning up those of us who don't put the metadata in. It's for preserving the people who do, which I think is the right approach.
Yep. So
although they should have, sorry, last thing on that. I mean, I wish they did have a way to say, hey, I want you to wipe out and clean up my metadata with the stuff that's in iTunes, just like you can with the album art.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you can't do that. You can with the CD tracks, because you can do the whole, you know, get track names thing. But that's only when you first rip it. I don't understand why I can't take MP3s or AAC files that I already have in my library and say, I want the actual, you know, iTunes metadata for this stuff.
I'm guessing there's some extra data that is pulled from a CD when that happens. But who knows?
Okay. No, it comes out of the
it's all about
his database.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I know that. I get that, but there's got to be something else. Let's just not get into that. So, okay. So, for those who do want to upgrade their matched iTunes songs to the 256 iTunes, what is it? Is it Plus? What do they call that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That quality, here's how you do it. It sucks that you have to do it this way, but it's not too hard. Create a smart playlist in iTunes. What you want to do is you say match all the following where the bit rate is less than 256K. The media kind obviously has to be music. And then the two magic parts are you want to do an option click. So you get the any of the following are true. And you say that the iCloud status is either matched or the iCloud status is purchased. So you add both of those in there. And then that will give you a really great smart playlist. And I call it upgradable. Those are all the songs that have been matched or purchased. Nothing that was uploaded, because if you uploaded it, it's just going to download whatever you uploaded. So these are, and that's interesting. It's matched something that's called Track 7.
I love that song.
Yeah. So so that way, now the magic then, what you do is select all, option delete, and that's kind of scary, but it'll throw it all into your trash. So it'll stay in your trash. So while you're doing this, you still have it in your trash. Don't empty your trash.
Yeah.
But then you get the iCloud, you get the download button on those. And so is there an easy way to download all those at the same time? You select all and what is it? Select right click?
Select all or right click and download.
Perfect. And then it'll download 256K.
Well, and if it's in the smart, if it's in a playlist, does it have the button down at the bottom? You scroll to the bottom of the playlist? Probably not.
I don't think
that's
so.
That's just on the iOS devices.
Yeah. But that's the almost magic way of doing it. And again, let's not get any further down the rabbit hole of how Apple should have maybe worked a little harder on this.
Well, another thing that you might want to do is make a smart playlist of all of the tracks where the Kind is protected AAC audio file and purchased from iTunes.
Oh, that's clever.
That's a good one. I'm going to do that right now.
Because what the awesome thing about this too is you can now upgrade your old, Fairplay DRM'd tracks to non-Fairplay versions. And that's really helpful for people too who have been in the situation where they bought some music under one iTunes account and some music under another iTunes account, and you've had to like authorize, that one copy of iTunes with multiple Apple IDs. You can now, authorize with the multiple IDs, get all the music there, and then take all of your Fairplayed stuff and unfairplay it, and then you can get rid of, that extra authorization that you have to have on your account. So that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, cool. Yep, that's not eligible. Oh, these are books. Media Kind should be music also. So
yes,
Kind
yes,
contains protected and
Media Kind is music.
Yeah, Media Kind is
that
music.
Should always be the first filter because this only works with music.
And you also want to do, just for the sake of making sure it's all good,
purchased.
iCloud status is purchased.
Yep.
Cool.
Just cool. Verify that works, but I'm pretty sure that works. I think you get the non-DRM version when it re-downloads.
Yeah, well,
that's pretty cool.
Let's do the great thing, that great idea of downloading something while you're podcasting. So we're doing it right now.
That's awesome. Until we got to this point, I was having a hard time justifying why I would even think about spending $25 on iTunes Match. And now I'm seeing a valid reason for me, which has nothing to do with storing music on the cloud. It's about fixing songs. It's about updating songs. And it's about stripping out DRM.
Yeah. Now, the only thing you need to be aware of when you're updating the songs, though, too, is your files are going to get a lot bigger.
So sure, but I have
storage is an issue. Yeah, but if storage is an issue for you, if something you're fighting with, you may want to move your iTunes library to a larger drive or get a larger drive before you start, upgrading all of your, 128 kilobit MP3s to 256 kilobit AACs. I mean, your storage is going to go up significantly.
Yeah, about once a year, I buy a bigger hard drive for iTunes.
Yep, I do the same thing. But somewhat related to that, too, is one of the other things that I didn't like was the all-or-nothing nature of how it works when you sync to an iOS device.
Yeah, that's insane.
There's that workaround for that. I mean, the good news is anything that you sync over to your iOS device before you turn on Match on that iOS device stays there.
Okay.
So the trick is you plug your iPhone in, sync over a cable, like a base set of music that you want to make sure is on your device, then turn on iTunes Match, and then all that stuff it doesn't wipe that stuff away, even though it warns you it's going to wipe the library. I think it just wipes the library file, but it still knows that those music tracks are on the device.
Ugh.
So you won't have to re-download them.
My mom is not going to like that because it's too complicated. I don't
like
it.
Again, that's what it comes back to, is if you know how to work around all these things, you can make it work for you. The only other way then is to, click on an album or an artist and scroll all the way to the bottom and click the download all to pull down all the tracks, and then you got to pull them down over the cloud. The other thing is a lot of people are looking for this to like save storage on their device. Yeah. On iOS, the tracks don't truly stream. They do that progressive download thing so that they're cached so that you can play them when you're in airplane mode or offline or something like that.
That's all right, but you can delete it.
Yeah, but how do you delete it? Most people don't know how you delete tracks on an iPhone.
Swipe.
Yeah.
Swipe.
You and I know. Again, clunky.
Yeah, but think of how many people wouldn't think to swipe if they have videos on their iPhone. Because you can't swipe to delete a video.
You can't?
Mm-mm. If you go into the videos app and try and delete something by swiping.
Oh, because they're in the videos app now. You used to be able to, when it was in the iPod app, you could go into the movies and
yeah, delete. How about that? But now to delete items that way, well, you can't. You actually have to connect to your computer and use iTunes. So you can delete them and then resync, which kind of kills the whole, hey, you don't need to connect to your computer anymore.
Well, and let me tell you one more thing that I found out. So I was real worried about eating up all the storage and then not being able to either download more music or put stuff on there. Apparently, there's some sort of, I was reading today a Macworld piece that said there's some sort of secret algorithm that goes on. iTunes Match will actually delete music, which is another thing to be aware of. It will delete music that's already on your device if you're pulling in new music and it's run out of space.
Yeah.
And the algorithm supposedly does it intelligently. What it looks at is two factors. What's the oldest stuff and how infrequently has that oldest stuff been played? So it takes the least played stuff that's the oldest and that's the stuff it pushes out first. So that's kind of feels like how Time Machine works, you know, where it throws out the older backups to make room for the new. So I guess, but people aren't going to like that either. Nobody likes it when an app is on its own deciding just to delete stuff. You guys there?
Yes.
Oh.
That was weird. For a second, I thought the show was suddenly over.
Oh, I was reading things. All right. So I think the last thing we should mention.
Picks?
Well, you've got to get out of here.
I got to run. Yeah, right, and then you guys can talk about the thing that I'm going to. I'm going to the Steve Jobsy lost interview thing tonight.
Yeah, I went to see that last night.
Yep, last night. And you said it was good, so I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, so you do your pick. We'll run over one more thing, and then we'll do our picks. So it'll be a little shuffled.
All right, so my pick is something I just found out about, I think, the other day. So I haven't spent too much time with it, but I spent enough time with it to figure out that it's awesome. And I had read about it before and never downloaded it. And it is I thought it was like a TV guide scheduling kind of app, and it's called Fanhattan. So I have iTV, which I really like for looking up my local like TV schedule and for kind of adding things to my Netflix queue. Fanhattan is like a guide for TV shows and movies, but it's got more of a social spin. It's also just very amazingly designed.
Ooh, it looks good.
It's really pretty. And the UI takes a little bit of finagling to figure out, but once you kind of get it, it feels more like a Plex or like a Boxy kind of style interface. It ties in with Facebook and Twitter, if you'd like. And so you can kind of find shows that people in your Facebook feed like and movies, things like that. It also just kind of has a running total of like some of the top shows. You can sort by genre. I haven't found, there's a search up at the bottom. So if you need to find a specific show, the one thing I haven't found, and I'm not sure if it does it, which is how most other of these guide apps work, is it doesn't look like it's using location in any way. So it doesn't look like it's more show based rather than schedule based, if that makes sense at all. So you find a show and then you can find out where it's playing or where you can get that show, but through other like online services. So it works with like, hey, is it on Amazon? Is it on Netflix? Is it on Vudu? Is it available on iTunes? And it gives you links to all those things. And for like stuff like Netflix, specifically any one of the services that has an iPad app, if that show is available on one of those iPad apps and you have that iPad app installed on your device, you find an episode, you tap it, and then it just launches right over to that app. So like if I find a Netflix movie, I'm like, oh, hey, I want to see that on Netflix. So it's much better for like browsing and finding Netflix movies and then drilling into those. And then like on the movie side, when you go into, or I assume this works on the TV show side as well, once you start drilling into the details of a specific show, it comes up with another interface, and you can get like meta review information. You can get the reviews for the movies from like Rotten Tomatoes. It has a whole social stream, so it has Twitter and Facebook posts related to that show or episodes. It has all the information about the actors. It has videos that, you know, if you're looking up actor information, it has their YouTube videos for stuff they've done. It's just like you keep drilling into this and there's just like more and more information available, all related to your shows.
So this totally beats what IMDb is doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure that like the data is coming from different sources. So like when you go into cast and crew and you start drilling into a specific actor, I'm assuming some of that information is coming from IMDb, but it's presented in this really cool kind of cover flow kind of way that you jump between the actor's bio and then their credits, their additional movie credits. And it's all threaded. So you can, you know, when you're using it, you're just like drilling down into more and more information. So I'm seeing this for me, like when I'm watching TV shows, is going to be an awesome tool to go in and find out more information about the TV shows, find out what other things that specific actors have done, all that sort of stuff. But it's really focused on the apps, you know, getting access to the content from the apps. I think with some of the new release movies, you can get show times, but I couldn't find a way on TV schedules to get like, hey, I'm on Cox in San Diego. What's the TV schedule for tonight? I don't think it necessarily does that. Or if it does, I haven't found it yet. But overall, it's a very impressive app for getting all kinds of meta information and scheduling stuff and finding out about new shows and finding out about shows that your friends like and seeing if those are, for me, the big deal is going to be seeing if those are on Netflix or on Hulu or Vudu or if I can buy them in iTunes, what have you.
Cool. So,
yeah, it kind of rocks. And it's really nicely designed. Which I really always appreciate.
Yeah, it looks great. So it is called Fanhattan. It's free. And
free.
Is it? It's iPad only, right?
No, they just came out. The reason I found out about it was today they just released the iPhone version. So it's probably universal. I think
no, it's
just
not.
Updated
it's separate.
Today.
You got separate.
Oh, it is separate. Okay.
But they're both free.
Cool.
Awesome. All right.
All right. So that's my pick.
Adam, have fun.
Thank you, sir.
Enjoy the interview. It's very good.
And we'll miss you while you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Bye, guys. Right. See you next week.
Yep. So, where is he? We're not allowed to give him any spoilers. Is he gone from the call? Okay, there we go.
Yep, he's gone. And since I'm not going to have the opportunity to see this before it shows up on like Netflix or whatever, I'm not worried about spoilers.
Okay. Well, for those who are worried about spoilers, fast forward, I guess. But I don't think you'll be able to watch this movie at the point of this release. So a majority of the video, so it's the entire interview that was done for the Revenge of the Nerds, right? That's what it was called?
The
series?
Oh, right.
Yes. So maybe you've seen the...
I was thinking Pirates of Silicon Valley, which was not a documentary.
I think I'm getting the title wrong. That's a movie. Is that... I know it's a movie, but...
Oh, wait. Revenge of the Nerds is a movie.
Right.
Yeah. That's where they had Booger and... So that's not it at all.
Okay. But anyway, it was done for an interview on PBS, and I think they used maybe 10-15 minutes of it, and it was an hour and a half long. And maybe you've seen the clips where Steve Jobs is talking about how Microsoft has no taste, what have you. It's that tape, the entire hour, and I think it's hour and 45 minutes, something like that. A good portion of it is biographical, historical stuff that is in the book. There are details that aren't in the book. It's that part, I would say, is not a wash because it's in the book. It's all interesting stuff. In addition to that, there are a lot of interesting business insights, such as when Steve was building up Apple, I guess. What he found in, because the question was, how did you learn how to work in business without any professional training? And he elaborated on essentially just asking a lot of questions and understanding the process and seeing why a lot of things are done in business that are just kind of accepted as the way you do them. And if you drill down with someone on, well, why is this done that way? You get interesting answers. And in a lot of cases, you can find a better solution to it. And that's one of the things that he really pushed on for the manufacturing process of the original Macintosh, and cutting the costs down on that, cutting down the production time and all that stuff. So there's a lot of interesting stuff like that. A lot of insights on business and philosophies of life, et cetera. It's very cool.
Now, okay, so for perspective, was this interview done before Steve was run out of the company or after he came back?
Right before he came back, right before Apple bought Next.
Okay.
So it's an interesting point in time. And I think a really interesting part of this interview was Steve Jobs sneezed during the interview, and I don't think I've ever seen Steve sneeze before. And it was just really kind of funny and interesting, because it was just like, whoa, I've never seen him sneeze before. That was weird. He's human.
Did he sneeze on my caliber?
No.
And you've heard me sneeze, right?
Nobody sneezes like you, Jeff.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was all around, I very much enjoyed it.
So how long is this?
I think it's about an hour and a half, maybe an hour 45.
Okay. And you said when we first started talking about this, about how much time it was, I was curious if they had the whole thing in there or not.
It
sounds like they just, all the footage, it's there, and you just watch it go from beginning to end.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm looking at, I would say, I'm going to say hour and 15 minutes, something like that. Looking at the audio from the recording that I didn't make.
Right.
Yeah.
So what was the most interesting thing out of that interview for you?
It's hard to say, pin down specifically.
All right, pick a couple things.
No, I'm saying because it was more stuff that still needs to kind of settle and simmer, but a lot of it was the business philosophies and what he learned from picking this up as he went. I think one of the really cool things that he talked about was how much better it is to have someone who's the best at programming as opposed to someone who's maybe like a B level programmer. And he likened it to the best taxi driver in New York and the worst taxi driver in New York, or maybe just a really crappy taxi driver in New York. Maybe the best one will get you to where you need to go in like half the time. So like it's a 2x improvement. But with programmers and software developers, it's like 100-fold or more. I may be getting the details wrong, but it's incredibly it's a huge gap when you get really good people. And the idea is of how teams, someone, if you get a bunch of people together in a team who are the best in their field, and they're all working together with a bunch of other people who are also the best, they kind of self-manage and self-police, and they're really focused on just doing the best work that they can, and it really makes it an interesting dynamic and that sort of thing. And talking about how certain companies, when they have initial successes with products, and you can look at Apple the early Apple with the Macintosh and the Apple II, and I think more so with the Macintosh, because that's when Steve was ousted, but the fact that they kind of just kept coasting on that and focused more on the process than on the content of what they were actually doing with the Macintosh and what they were doing with future products and stuff like that. It's really cool. And I recommend that if you can find, I hope they release this in some way. They were literally playing it off a DVD in the theater I watched it. the DVD menu popped up after it stopped.
Okay, so how much did it cost for you to watch the movie?
I'd say $12 total.
So you spent $12 for someone to pop a DVD into a player.
I'd say worth it, though.
Well, sure, but it's just kind of interesting. Okay, so how many people in the tech industry would the average person be okay spending $12 to go watch a DVD of an interview? I mean, Steve Jobs is very unique in that sense. I can't imagine that there would be nearly as many people that would go to see a DVD of an hour and a half interview with Larry Ellison. And he's a very dynamic person.
And he's kind of crazy too.
He's kind of crazy. So an interview with him would be a lot of fun to watch. But I'm betting that you wouldn't get nearly as many people interested in spending $12 to watch a DVD in a theater. But since it's Steve Jobs, well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. Hopefully they'll release something. Otherwise, I would suggest maybe looking around for some kind of bootleg if you are so inclined.
If you're into that sort of thing.
Right. Not advocating that.
I bet it's going to show up on Netflix before too long.
Yeah. Totally. There are a couple things. We got some listener feedback from a couple episodes ago, and it's nice that it's just me and Jeff now, because it's regarding the show that Jeff and I did alone without Adam.
Specifically, how appropriate. Oh, this is where I get called to task, isn't it?
Yes. The stuff about GPS. So we got some email regarding that. Specifically, where you talked about how you only needed one GPS satellite in order to acquire a general location. So we got
I know exactly what they're going to say.
We got an email from...
Right, because I completely misspoke. Okay.
Okay, so a couple dudes, a couple people. One guy in particular who actually works on the GPS system, he says you need a minimum of four satellites, and that if you get more than four satellites in your field of view, then yes, your receiver can use the extra info that the extra satellites provide to come up with a better solution with more than four, not three. So, and for those who don't remember, we were talking about GLONASS and GPS and how that works on with regards to the iPhone and that sort of thing. I also called out to Skip, my rocket scientist buddy in Florida. He gave us a call. We were talking about orbits, what kind of orbits the GPS satellites
are. Oh, awesome.
Yep, so here's Skip.
Michael, it's Skip. Hey, I heard your question about geostationary versus geosynchronous. So tell Jeff he gets to keep his geek creds, because he basically got it right. The primary difference between the two orbits is their inclination. So if you're in a geosynchronous orbit, it basically means you're going around the Earth at the same rotational speed that the Earth is rotating. But the only way you're geostationary, the only way the satellite is always over the same point above the Earth, is if the spacecraft is at a zero-degree inclination. So the inclination is basically the angle the orbital plane makes with respect to the Earth's equator. So you probably heard, you know, a lot of the news stories about these couple of satellites the last few months that were getting ready to re-enter, and they were saying, hey, because of the orbital inclination, it covers a good chunk of the Earth, you know, as far as the possible landing sites for the spacecraft when it re-enters. The reason for that is if you're at a zero-degree inclination, the spacecraft never passes overhead unless you're on the equator. But if you're at a higher inclination than 0 degrees, you pass over any piece of land that is at a latitude equal to that inclination or less. So you kind of think about it, Florida's at 28.5 degrees. In order for a satellite to pass overhead, it has to have an inclination of at least 28.5 degrees. So these last two spacecraft that they were talking about, they could basically re-enter at any place on its orbit. Because they are high inclination, they cover, you know, a large degree of latitude. So that's basically the difference between geosynchronous and geostationary. In fact, if you play with that app that I told you about, Orbit Architect, you can actually select geosynchronous orbit, and then you can play with the inclinations, and you can actually see the ground track change. So, anyway, that's your answer. Back to you later.
Cool. And,
okay, the fact that we had someone that's a GPS scientist and a rocket scientist call in to give us the right info, you people fracking rock.
Yeah, that's awesome. And Skip actually called back with a little more information on the GPS too. So
what was that app you talked about? Orbit something?
Orbit Architect.
Architect.
I believe is called.
I'm writing it down now. And my problem with the GPS information I provided, what I meant to be talking about was having a GPS with a single antenna, which kind of dates me because I was actually teaching GPS classes years ago when you could buy commercial GPSs with a single antenna, and it took a lot longer to get an acquisition because the antenna had to hit multiple satellites to try and give you an accurate location. Oh. So shame on me for mixing that up. And how awesome is that, that the people that gave us the correct info
actually work on it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. So, if I'm going to be called to task, I'm glad it's people like that.
Mm-hmm. And we did get a lot of emails from other people too. So, but here's the second part of this call from Skip.
Hey Michael, it's Skip again. I forgot to mention the GPS and the GLONASS satellites actually aren't in geosynchronous.
So the GLONASS, for folks that don't remember, it's the Russian equivalent of the GPS, and that's what we were talking about, how the iPhone 4S now has the ability to use that as well. So
right.
And,
yeah.
Oh, I was just going to comment that the fact that a rocket scientist said I get to keep my geek cred.
Oh yeah.
I should be wearing a t-shirt that says a rocket scientist says I get to keep my geek cred.
Yeah, absolutely.
Satellite, so thank you, Skip.
Actually, mm-hmm. Aren't in geosynchronous or geostationary orbits. They're actually in lower orbits. And basically the reason for that is they don't have to be that high to get the coverage they need. So it's a little bit cheaper for them to go to lower orbits. So they're in what's called a medium Earth orbit with a high inclination, so they can cover the most amount of ground. So that's it. Popular.
Yep. So that also is very interesting that it's those satellites are pretty high up. They're higher than Hubble. And Hubble's like 300 miles up or something like that. So it's crazy.
Yeah.
So I did want to mention some strings were found. A developer, John Heaton, found some strings that indicate that we may see some iChat-like services included in iOS very soon or at some point.
You know, that doesn't surprise me. That there have been hints that have cropped up in code for the past few months that we might see something like that.
Mm-hmm. And it makes sense. You know, we've got iMessage, we have FaceTime, and now we're seeing stuff about Jabber and
AIM. I would love to see that whole integration thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and while it might not be iChat, you know, iChat on its surface seems very simple, but man, it's got a lot of features and there are a lot of applications in the App Store. Verbs, for example, is one of those apps that it's very pretty, but it doesn't take care of everything that I want. And it's hard to implement all of those features. So it'd be interesting to see what Apple does for that. I like the idea of having AIM available in the OS.
That would be really nice.
Mm-hmm. And then regarding the the native Gmail app. We talked about that last week, and you were telling me how it was the pits because it uses the native or the web interface.
Yeah, but they've released a new version.
They did. So I downloaded it, checked it out. Guess what? I don't like it. You were right.
I haven't even bothered to download the new version.
It's the same web interface. Yes, it gives you notifications. Yes, it's in an app. That's fine. But it is, part of it is a web view. And the thing that bothers me the most about it is just the performance of the web view. You have a couple really strange issues that exist in both in Safari and in the application, where suddenly you tap on a search field and it zooms a little bit. Why would it zoom? I'm sure there's a way to keep it from zooming. I've seen other web applications that do that properly. And then the issue that you get when it zooms is you have this table view and stuff is running off to the side, but it's set up so that you can't pinch and zoom on it because it's this web table view. So now you've got stuff off to the side and you can't fix it. And then it causes you to not be able to tap on some rows. So you then suddenly you can't go to that message that you were searching for. It almost seems like they didn't use the app as they were writing it.
Yeah, it's really what it feels like to me. Okay, so if we have anyone that listens to the show that works for Google, first, sorry that we have to bag on the application, but really we have to bag on the application. Second, if you're in a position where you can tell us why Google chose to do this whole nesting a web interface inside an application thing, which it seems to me like that should be a violation of App Store policies.
No, I don't think so. I think that's perfectly legal.
Okay, well, then I will discount that statement that I just made. And I will say, please let us know why Google chose to go that route instead of making a truly native application.
Well, I think the more relevant question is why they didn't do this a year or two ago when they had the web interface all ready to go. Why did it take them so long to make a little shell around it? That's kind of the irritating part.
That's a good question. Okay, answer both, please.
And for a company like Google, who's so focused on their way of doing things, especially with Gmail, and there are a lot of great things about Gmail, and that's why I use Mailplane. You'd think that they would really make sure that those unique features worked well or worked.
Well, okay. I have to wonder, and I'd like to think I'm wrong, but I have to wonder if the reason the Gmail app for the iPad feels quite frankly like crap is because Google is consciously choosing to build better applications for Android and really didn't want to have a high quality application on the iPad.
That's what I'm thinking. And on the,
and
I mean,
I would like to think I am
too.
Wrong, but I do have to wonder.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So, Jeff, do you have a pick this week?
I do, actually.
All right.
And I say that as if it's a surprise. Like I haven't had a pick on any other week. All right. So my pick is an iPad app, and it's called CIA Operation Ajax. And this is an interactive graphic novel. It's like a 200-page graphic novel where it's this kind of World War II clandestine spy sort of story. And actually, it's more like Cold War era. And the whole graphic novel, it has audio to go along with it, and it has all of these other features that are kind of built in, so you can tap on things and get other information and little videos that will play, sort of like the movie Newsreels, Newsreels. And it's just this, it's a really great example of what you can do with graphic novel type content on a device like the iPad. And the bonus is right now it's free.
Cool. It's called CIA Operation Ajax.
Yes.
All right. So my pick this week is it's something of a repick, but the reason I'm doing it is because, one, it works for the iPhone 4S. It works for the iPhone 4. It even works on the iPhone 3GS. In fact, it works on, I would say, probably every iPhone. So why not pick it? It's a hardware pick. It's the Kensington Soundwave car mount. It's $40. And I've had this thing, I've had two different iterations of this car mount, and I love it. I use it, I think, every day. Anytime I'm using my car, every time I'm in my car, I'm using this thing and just enjoying it so much. I recommend it completely. So it mounts to your car window with a suction cup very securely. And I've never had it pop off, ever. Once you get it on there, it's nice, secure. You make sure you don't have any liquid. Make sure it's a dry surface. Pop it on there, lock it down, boom, you're good. Now, it's a gooseneck adjustable neck on there. So, and it's very long, so you can adjust it any way you want. The actual cradle for your phone is... It turns 45 degrees, so you can do portrait or landscape. You can use, like I said, it works with, I'm going to say every iPhone, I'm going to say iPods too, of a certain size. As long as they're about the width of an iPhone, they'll work just fine. So it'll work with the iPod Touch, certainly. And so the way that it holds on to whatever device you have is such that it just kind of, it's spring loaded, so it holds on to it. If you have a case on there, if you don't have a case, whatever, it's really great. It's really secure. So I use it with a case on. I have an in-case slider on my iPhone 4, and it fits just fine. I even had a tripod mount on the back of my phone for a while, and I was using this car mount just fine, no problem. You have access to your dock connector, so you can plug it into your car audio. That's what I do. And even the coolest part, and I would say this isn't the biggest selling point, because it's not the greatest thing, but it also, the reason it's called the Soundwave is because it's designed for GPS navigation on your phone. So now this is a case where you have to have an iPhone 4 or a 4S for this part to work properly. And I believe they have a version of this that works with the prior models. And the reason for that is it amplifies it acoustically.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you have little gaskets at the bottom that match up with the microphone and speaker on the bottom of your phone. And then it amplifies that audio acoustically for your turn-by-turn navigation. And that's, so on the iPhone 4, they swapped sides for the speaker, and that's why you'd have to have an iPhone 4 or a 4S in order to use that part. But frankly, if you're using this, I highly recommend getting one of these. And I recommend this one because it has feet on the bottom. It holds it on underneath as well as from the side, so it's not going to fall down. Plug it into your car audio and use it that way. It's fantastic. Like I said, I've been using it forever. $40. It's awesome. It's the Kensington Soundwave. Check it out. They also have the other version that looks almost exactly the same way, without the acoustic stuff. I believe it holds on to the device in the same exact way. It just doesn't have the bottom part. That's also really good. So either of those work, but my pick is the Soundwave.
You know, if I was going to buy one, I would go with the Soundwave.
Yeah.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah, it's great. And again, my favorite two features are the mount is great and it swivels all around, and you can make it very comfortable for you to see. And the fact that it fits almost any configuration of your phone, case, no case, whatever phone you have, it's great. And it'll probably fit devices other than the iPhone too. So check it out. All right. So if you want to find our iPhone picks, you can find those as well as the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. If you're driving, don't worry about writing it down. You can check them all out right there. We've got links and all that great stuff. You can review the show in iTunes, give it a rating, give it a review. We like both of those things. Helps the show out, helps get new listeners and tell new people about the show. Of course, you can send your feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. That is the email address. And you can send audio as well. So you can call in 202-642-6667 with questions or comments. But definitely we prefer emailing in. We definitely prefer audio for sure. But the best way to do it is to record it on your iPhone or your iPod Touch with the Voice Memo app.
Or the iPad, because it has a very nice microphone too.
Does it have a Voice Memo app though? I guess if you can record it on your iPad, sure, do it that way. And then email it in to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. And then we might play it on the show. Of course, our advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. If you want to sponsor the show, check that out. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. He's at Jay Gamet on Twitter. And you can find his Zazzle store at zazzle.com/Jay Gamet. That's where you can find a bunch of cool things, including the We Have Communicators mug.
And everything tastes better in that.
That's true. Adam Christensen, who is not here, he had to leave to go see the Steve Jobs interview. He's at the MacCast, MacCast.com. He's also at MacCast on Twitter, and the member version of the show is member.maccast.com.
And if you haven't signed up to be a member of that show yet, what's wrong? Go do it.
Check it out. Member.maccast.com. Get on that. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And I'm also at Lil Reviews, L-I-L Reviews. Those are little Twitter-sized reviews of things, which, frankly, have been beer-related lately. But it's
your Twitter account. You can review whatever you want.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm reviewing whatever I want. Maybe I should review this hummus that I've been eating. It's pretty good.
I think you should.
I will. All right, that's it. We will see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No.